I don't want to introduce this show. Fuck this show. Emily, how you doing?
Hi, Chad. Thank you for joining me at the internet's one and only podcast about comic books.
That's the joke. You think I would know that? We've been running with that for a while, and I just like, you're like, introduce the show, and I was like, I don't remember words. Words are hard.
Well, technically, I do have the intro written in the doc, if you have that.
You do!
Up.
I gave you so much shit for making that doc and adding that stuff, and I was like, that's dumb. Who's gonna use that? And then I'm just like, oh, there's a script. I don't understand why y'all put up with me some days, but here we are.
How you doing, Chad?
It's been an interesting couple days. Friday was one of those days where like everything I touched broke, and then the stuff my cat touched also broke, apparently.
Oh, no.
I get a text from my brother. My coworker gave me more alcohol samples to try, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the little fucker knocks them over while I'm not here. And the only one that breaks is the one that contains the $60 bourbon.
No!
And there was a little bit left to salvage in the glass, or in the thing, like half a shot. So I get to taste it, but I don't get to do anything more than that. But I have it in a glass, and I'm going to try
tragic.
It now. I was so mad.
Cats are little assholes.
Oh, wow.
Is it good?
That's really interesting. It's aged in oak, and then it's aged in rum, and you can really taste the rum.
Mmm, interesting.
And about, like, 30 other things. Holy fuck, that's good. God, Ripley, you're a piece of shit. I mean, that wasn't, like, the worst thing that happened that day. I spent literally 3 hours in meetings and accomplished almost fucking nothing. It was one of those days.
Ugh.
And then no one knew how to communicate. I don't want to bitch about Friday, because Saturday's been pretty good. You know what I've done on Saturday?
Tell me.
I watched The Ghost of Molly McGee.
Yay! Tell me how you felt about that.
I enjoyed it. I didn't, like, love it. Like, when I watched the first episode of Owl House, I was like, fuck yeah, this is great. And same like Gravity Falls.
It's definitely not as good as Gravity Falls or The Owl House by, like, a huge margin.
Yeah. However, it is charming. It's a lot
it's
more
cute.
Of, like, a normal Saturday morning cartoon, I think, in structure and, like, the way the jokes hit and kind of the energy and pacing. It's a little, I feel a little old for it in some respects. Like, it's very energetic.
Oh, 100%. This is absolutely going for a much younger target audience than something like The Owl House.
Yeah. That being said, like, most of the jokes were pretty funny. The animation is really good. The character design's really good. Gazpacho's in it from Chowder, the voice actor. I recognized him right the fuck away. I was like, that's Gazpacho. Oh, hell yeah.
Did you also
like
recognize
him.
Master Shake from Aqua Teen Hunger Force?
I never really watched Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
That surprises me.
I was not a stoner in high school. Like, that, most of the Adult Swim stuff, like, did nothing for me. I stuck around for the anime, like, after. But,
I guess I just assumed that you would have watched some of it.
I watched some of it. What the hell was on?
But yeah, the Scratch, the ghost, it's Dana Snyder, and he's just literally doing the Master Shake voice. It's like the exact same voice, but...
yeah.
So it's a little jarring that it's not as crude as I'm accustomed to, but, you know, I always love the... any show with a premise of, like, a Ray of Sunshine character and a, like, total grump who, like, secretly actually finds the Ray of Sunshine character endearing. That's, like, a character dynamic that I really enjoy. So, I like The Ghost of Molly McGee. I think it's fun. I didn't tell you that you should watch it because, like, I was thinking, oh, Chad's really gonna like this. It was more like, it is a new cartoon and I was interested in hearing what you thought about it.
Sure. And yeah, I watched the first episode, and then so two episodes per episode, right? They're what, 11 minutes. My brother caught the last half of the second one.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of, like, keeping walking, he actually stuck around and watched it, because they were doing this fun slapstick where the one lady was, like, knocked out and the ghost entered her body. And
yeah.
That was funny. There's actually stuff that this does right away I really like. I like the world building in the first, like, 2 minutes of it.
Mm-hmm.
It establishes a lot really well. And then when the ghost shows up and haunts the family, like, they can see him and they can interact with him. And, like, everybody's in on it, like, right away. Mm-hmm. And it's not one of those, my secret ghost friend. It's more like, no, this is my up in front ghost friend. This is the tone we're running with. And I do think that's to the show's benefit.
They do sort of have a little bit of the secret ghost when it comes to, like, later episodes, but it's only with, like, people who are, like, outside the family. And it's not like everything will be ruined if we are exposed as having a ghost. It's more like you don't want people to get freaked out because there's a ghost.
Sure.
But it's not, it's really not as bad as I thought it would be on that front in any way. I've watched about 5 episodes because I have Hulu Live TV, and that for whatever reason the first 5 episodes are already available, even though they're not I don't even know if they've actually fully aired. But the first 5 episodes are supposed to be coming to Disney Plus soon, so I think that that's fun.
Nice.
And I think it's cute.
Yeah, it's cute.
Fun time.
I think I'm going to wait until, like, the full season's done, and then if my cartoon-loving friends, who are you and then a guy in my writer's group, are like, oh, no, actually, you should go watch this, then I'll come back to it.
I'll keep you posted on how the season goes, for sure, because I have every intention of keeping watching this.
There's really cool places it can go based on, like, the rule set established in the beginning. Like, there's actual danger for Molly to make the town happier, because then Scratch will get basically ghost fired and, like, thrown into a tornado, right? Like, so I'm curious, at some point that conflict has to happen, and yeah. Then the show's got a couple options, and I'm hoping it veers into something I might enjoy. But I do think that given the age range I'm guessing this one's for, it's probably not going to go as dark or introspective as something that I would like it to.
No, I don't think so. Like, it's but good, it's don't get me wrong, but, like, I definitely don't anticipate it going very deep, you know?
Yeah. So, that was fun. And then, speaking of Disney+, I did watch the first 3 episodes of Star Wars Visions.
Yeah, buddy, so what'd you think?
I liked them. They were fun.
I figured you would like the second one the most, the one with the band.
Yeah, I did. That was my favorite. It was funny, it was my brother's least favorite, but I don't know, there's something just kind of... There's just something so whimsical and dumb about it, and then, like, seeing a chibi Boba Fett, like, nodding along to a song and drinking out of, like, a styrofoam cup like he's at a concert was... I can't believe, like, that's a thing that isn't just, like, written on, you know, the Star Wars fanfic website, right? Like, oh, no, you can actually see this on Disney. This is a scene and a legitimate thing on Disney+.
That's one of my favorite things about this series, even though I still have only seen, like, the first 4 episodes. I need to watch the rest of them. But, like, it feels like they were given a lot of, like, freedom to do stuff with the Star Wars world that you don't really see with the franchise in most of its other installments, because, like, I don't know, there's this fear of, like, you know, doing something that might upset the fans or whatever.
Yeah.
And but it seems like they were given a lot of freedom with the directions that each like animation studio took their episode. And so I think it was fun. And, you know, I wasn't super hot on the second episode the first time I watched it, but I've sort of come around more, and I think I'm more endeared to it now.
I'm curious, when they did the song on the dub, did they actually have, like, an English dub song, or did they play the Japanese one?
I think they played the Japanese song, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't remember. I'd have to go back and look. Because I did watch the English dubs, just because, like... I was watching it, like, in preparation for this show, and I didn't want to have to, like, pause every time I needed to check my phone. So, and the English dub also makes the third episode, the Studio Trigger episode, even more ridiculous, because...
Yeah, I bet.
It's just, like... I mean, it's Studio Trigger ridiculousness, so hearing, like, people say that in English is, like, it kind of, it messes with the immersion, you might say.
Yeah, because I know Jean-Luc did not like that episode, like, at all, and weren't super hot on it either.
I liked it. The writing is very bad, but
it's dumb as rocks.
It. Yeah, that was my whole point, is that it's extremely stupid, but it was also very fun.
Yeah, the It was funny. It was my brother's favorite of the three we watched. And it's like, I kind of get it, though. Like, it is exactly what I want from Studio Trigger. It is fucking ridiculous. It's so over the top. Mm-hmm. The animation is gorgeous when it needs to be. Mm-hmm. When it's not, like, high-end stuff, it's kind of bad. But wait, welcome to
John
anime.
John also just didn't like the animation style. And, you know, like, you can't, you know, if you don't like it, there's not much you can do about that.
Dude rides a fucking X-Wing with a powered up lightsaber and cuts an entire fucking Star Destroyer in half to save his sister.
I liked it.
It was so dumb. I loved it.
And like his sister with like all her lightsabers and shit. Oh, so good.
Yeah. It was so many anime cliches too in there. Just like, it was like distilled anime. Just the characters are talking, and
that episode
is
truly the essence of Studio Trigger boiled down to its bare essentials.
It really is,
and that's why I liked it. Is because I just thought it was a good dumb fun time, but it's also dumb as rocks. So
yeah, I was watching that, and I was like, this is going to be someone's first experience with anime, is these Star Wars episodes.
Oh, I love that.
And I don't know what those people are going to think. I hope they like
really
it.
Love the idea of, like, a child watching these and, like, that being a, like, formative animation influence.
Yeah, like, for me, it was Pokemon, and then for some kid, it's literally going to be Star Wars.
For me, it was also Pokemon. And then later... Yay. Code Lyoko.
Oh yeah, Code Lyoko. We've talked about that before. That show's That show's kind of a hoot.
Yeah, I love it. Chad, do you know anything about Doki Doki Literature Club?
I know that something dark and spooky happens like 2 hours in or 3 hours in, and I don't remember what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And otherwise, that's about it.
Yeah, that's about all I knew going in. I started playing it earlier this week, and I am only about, like, 3 hours in, so I've gotten to the spookiness. I kind of like it. It reminds me of another series that I'm very fond of, Higurashi Nanaku Koroni, but,
Like all that rolled off your tongue like you didn't even care.
I'm used to saying it.
You are practiced in weeb.
It kind of reminded me of that, but it's like, you know, it starts off like it's going to be like a normal visual novel. It's even the beginning premise reminds me a lot of like K-On, but without like music. It's like there's the literature club and they need 4 members and like your player character's childhood best friend is in the literature club and she like kind of guilts you into coming and checking it out, and then like you get like crushes on a couple of the girls in the literature club, so you decide like, oh, okay, I guess I'll stay. And then like as you progress the game, there's like what I will say is that everything in this game is extremely predictable. Like, all of the twists that have happened so far are, like, very well telegraphed, but it's still, even when you know something is going to happen, it still manages to kind of, like, I don't know, be, like, a little freaky or a little jarring. And there's elements of, like, fourth wall breaking with like the game like glitching out and stuff, and like,
oh, that's cool,
a character like knowing that they're in a game and like telling you like, hey, if you think something's important about to happen, you should save your game, haha. And like, just I think you would like it if you ever gave it a shot. The whole game is I believe I looked it up and it's supposed to be like 6 hours or something to play, like just the normal run of the game. I think you would like it. I kind of wish I'll reserve my full opinion until I've actually finished it. I wish some of the character writing was a little deeper, like a little more nuanced, but like, you know, I get what it's going for and I'm enjoying it, so.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never played a visual novel.
Mm-hmm.
I remember there was an Opinions Are Cheap episode where we had someone on who was working on a gay furry visual novel.
That's fun.
And that was a fun episode.
You should play Dream Daddy.
No.
Well, we can talk about that later.
What we should do is talk about the episode title, because this episode is about My Little Pony, A New Generation.
You've already decided?
Hell fucking yes, I have. I mean, it could be about the Molly McGee thing, but I think MLP will get us more clicks, and also...
That's true.
I think we're going to spend a little bit of time on this, because it's a movie!
Yeah,
and Jean-Luc and Alex aren't here to tell us to shut the fuck up.
I tried to get everything else I wanted to say out of the way, so that we could fully devote the next 15 minutes to My Little Pony, A New Generation. Chad, what did you think of the movie?
It is very cute. I had a lot of fun with it.
I was worried you weren't going to like it.
I mean, it is an imperfect movie, and there are things I definitely don't like about it.
Oh, absolutely. I have many questions.
As an experience, like, I had a lot of fun with it. I think the first, like, 5 to 10 minutes are extremely strong in setting up the story and the characters and the world, while also kind of giving you information you already know if you've watched any of Gen 4. Like, there's a lot of work and care in those, like, first 5 minutes. And I appreciate that. It's well-crafted. The first 40 minutes of the movie, the first 60 minutes, because it's an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. The last half hour, absolutely
yeah.
rushed and unsatisfying.
Yeah. How did you feel about the little G4, like, short bit in the beginning, like the little fake out where they're playing with the toys and... Like, it seems like it's just a little intro sequence with Twilight Sparkle and all her friends, but then whoever's playing with the rarity toys, like, I'm gonna kill all the Earth Pony.
It was fun. Like, I wasn't sure if, like, they were gonna use those to transition it. I figured they're gonna transition into the movie proper. I wasn't sure how. Mm-hmm. And so then, obviously, like, Rarity says something out of character. It's like, oh, someone, you know, like, kids are probably playing with toys or whatever, like, I put the pieces together pretty quickly, mm-hmm. but I did think it was, like, really cute.
I really loved the animation style that they used for that sequence, and part of me wishes that we could have gotten, like, more G4 stuff with that style, but also, you know, like, it's time to lay the main six to rest. Like, it's time for the new generation.
You said lay to rest, and I immediately thought of, like, all the conversations I had with Cameron about child coffins. And how there's, like,
pony coffin.
Yeah, that is the appropriate response to that, by the way. Thank you for laughing.
Yeah, I don't know how to transition from that, but...
Who is your favorite new pony, Emily?
It's definitely Sunny. Like, she's just so cute. And I mean, I like all of them, honestly. Like, I like all of the characters way more than I anticipated. And, well, like... Maybe not like Hitch or Sprout, but all the other ones. I also, for the record, I rewatched this literally right before we started recording.
Nice.
That was why I was late, is because I misjudged my time and I was trying to finish the movie.
Like you do.
Yeah.
I listened to all the show tunes before we started.
What did you think of the songs? I was kind of disappointed that they went more of a pop song route then, like, because a lot of the G4 songs were inspired by, like, show tunes and stuff, but I liked all the songs. I kind of missed that, like, classical musical influence.
The first song and the third song are fantastic. I really like the first, like, chorus in the first song.
Oh, it's so catchy.
The way it builds up.
It's
awesome.
So catchy. It's stuck in my head right now.
Yeah, I listened to it again, like I said before, and I was like, fuck, this is great. Like, this is just a good show tune because it does what it needs to do. It's really well executed, and it's really showing off that the actress's singing voice. She's very good at singing.
You mean Vanessa Hudgens of High School Musical?
So, with G4, they had, like, singers do the singing, and then the actors do the acting. Is that the case here? Did these people actually...
Yeah, that's a good question. I know that some of the actors did their own singing and some of them did not. Like, for instance, Sprout was voiced by Ken Jeong, and Ken Jeong did not do his singing voice.
Oh, but I was really hoping that was actually him.
No, it's a different actor for the songs, but
okay.
You know, some of the actors that do the main characters have done singing in other things, so I'm looking it up now, but
I know I was always weirded out that, like, with G4, Tara Strong was not the singer for Twilight Sparkle.
Even though she can sing.
Yeah, like, she sings at a bunch of other stuff. Like, she's really good at singing, and that it always was weirded me out. I don't think any of the actresses in the G4 stuff actually, like, sang for their characters.
You know, I used to know more of the details on that, because I used to listen to the soundtrack all the time, but I don't quite remember now. Yeah, it looks like most of the other voice actors do the singing voices, because it's only under Ken Jeong that it says that a different actor provided his singing voice.
That's fair. I like Ken Jeong a lot, also known as Chang from Community, and probably noteworthy things.
Did I send you the meme that I made after watching My Little Pony, the movie?
No.
About Ken Jeong? It was, it's a Phineas and Ferb meme, and it has, Dr. Doofenshmirtz, and it's, the text said, "If I had a nickel for every time Ken Jeong played a cowardly, a useless coward who rose into, fascist power, I'd have two nickels," which isn't a lot, but it's weird that it's happened twice.
Yeah.
Because of the season in Community where he also becomes, like, a dictator.
I don't know. So, when it comes to that song, though, I don't know if you listened to the Offspring Self-Esteem, because I linked that.
I did! And I, you know, when I heard the song in the movie, I was like, something about this feels familiar. And then you said that, but I didn't actually click on the song. I just was like, Chad, what are you talking about? But then when you clarified, I listened to Self-Esteem by Offspring again. And then while I was watching the movie, I was like, oh yeah, it's definitely like the exact same song.
Isn't that fucking awesome?
It's pretty good, yeah.
The amount of care in that song, that song is like the highlight of the movie for me, because it's fucking hysterical, but like the dancing's
honestly,
great.
Honestly, it is one of the best songs.
Yeah, there's so many like references to music videos and other songs. There's just shit in the background. Like, there's so much care and love in it. It is so fun.
Yeah.
And then
I quite enjoyed it.
The other good song was when Izzy was making them all into unicorns. And I think that's just because that's the only other song where, like, multiple people get to sing. She actually gets to show off her singing voice, which is very good. It's a fun, catchy song. I guess, like, you're kind of right where they're very pop-inspired and not, like, show-tune-inspired. At the same time, she raps for a bit, and that's stupid, and I love it, so...
Honestly, yeah, like, any movie that gives Kimiko Glynn an excuse to rap is a good in my book. Very funny.
She was my favorite character, by the way, Izzy.
Yeah? That's good. She's great.
I was afraid I wasn't gonna like her because the trailers made her be like, oh, this is the Pinkie Pie character.
Everybody on the internet keeps saying, like, oh, Izzy's just Pinkie Pie again, and I don't agree.
Oh, she's not.
No.
She's got that energy, but she's definitely not Pinkie Pie.
Like, there's similarities, but, like, it's not just the same character over. One of the things I really like about this new group of characters is none of them is, like, you've got some analogous traits to previous ponies, but, like, they're not just, like, you don't have just a Rainbow Dash or a Twilight Sparkle. Like, they're all, right. Like, different and interesting in their own way.
Yeah, like, there's elements of, like, rarity in Izzy, and then there's elements of rarity in Pip.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that every character has, like, little bits. And, like, the main six are written to be fairly archetypal, right? So, of course, there's going to be stuff that transfers over. But I think, like, what's there is deliberate, and then what's not there is also deliberate.
Yes.
And I like that this show is, like, we're still My Little Pony, but we are very different from what came before it, and so you have to, you know, have fun with new characters, and it is nice that I liked all of them, but Izzy was, like, super fun, and I don't know, there's something about, like,
she's precious.
The way she got to talk and present herself and just kind of be a little stupid, but also not, like, too stupid. Like, I feel like all the characters are a little, like, childish in how they act. Like, no one's really smart. But that also sort of works to the movie's benefit. Like, it sets a certain expectation that, like, it's like kids playing with dolls is what Cameron said when we talked about this movie. And it works really well.
Yeah, absolutely. I also think that you should watch Centaur World, which features the same voice actress that voiced Izzy in a very different character, but in like a very good way. She does the voice for the main character whose name is just Horse.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah, I've been championing Centaur World, and I will continue to do so because it is excellent. And if you do happen to have, well, I was going to say if you happen to have access to Netflix, but honestly, it's probably also on the other website that you use for watching things. Like, I would not be surprised if Centaur World was also in there. It's very good, and I think that you would also jive with its sense of humor. But back to My Little Pony, I knew I was going to like this movie based on, like, just seeing the trailer. I was already pretty hype, and it was extremely cute. I liked all the characters. I even liked the influencer pony. She's really precious.
I'm curious what they're going to do with her going forward, because I like the idea a lot. Like, it's definitely a step in a different direction as far as characterization goes. Mm-hmm. My issue with her and then Zip as well is that they didn't really get a whole lot to do in the movie.
No.
Like, there's just so many characters and there's not a lot of time. And so I feel like they get sidelined. Like, when they're doing the DDR thing in the third act, I was really hoping she would take over and win it because she's a dancer. Like, she's a pop star, right? Like,
oh, that would have been fun. It's in her skill set.
Huh?
That would have been fun, and then, like,
it
she could have gotten
sense.
She could have gotten so into the dancing that, like, her little capelet flies off, and they see that she's a Pegasus, and everybody freaks out, and it's basically the same scene. Yeah!
There's little things like that, or, like, during the makeover bit, like, if she would have got more involved, because I think that could be in her skill set, too. And so, like, you have this character with deliberate skills that aren't honestly that transferable, but then there's spots for them, and then they're just not used. Zip's kind of the same way, where, like, we get her athletics and kind of her personality, but she's just in the background. She doesn't even get to sing, which honestly was kind of interesting, because maybe that's to the show's credit. Like, the idea of, like, one character just doesn't sing or can't sing, like, I think you can work with that, especially because you know there's going to be show tunes when the show kicks off proper.
Mm-hmm.
One of the funny things I kind of want to talk about is, like, the politics of this movie.
I feel like it was just a really weird decision to do the basic premise of all this. Like, I mean, okay, I have so many questions, Chad. I know that this is just me overthinking the plot of a children's movie, but you know what? That's just the life that I live. So, like, I don't understand how long has it been since Twilight Sparkle lived in the world, and, like, it's clearly long enough that, like, she is a hero of legend, but, like, so, and it's so far away that, like, they have mysteriously, the Earth ponies and the Pegasi and the unicorns have all split up. Like, why did that happen? Like, when did these crystals come into play? Like, I'm so confused. I think I have the biggest beef with the crystals because, like, it feels...
They're weird MacGuffin.
It feels like such a... If I had to theorize about the production of this movie, it feels like the crystals were added late into figuring out the plot because, like, some executive was like, we need to give them clearer goals instead of just trying to figure out what happened with the magic. But, like, when were these crystals made? And, like, did Twilight Sparkle have anything to do with this? Like, I'm so confused.
Yeah, I don't understand the timeline too much, especially given, like, the technology advancement that, like, that we see. When I was talking politics, though, I was thinking more of, like, how anti-authoritarian this movie is.
Oh, that too. I just, I got off track because I realized that I have so many unanswered questions about everything of this movie. But yeah, I like that Sprout is given one job to do and he immediately fucks it up.
Well,
he's like, don't start a war.
Yeah, and, like, he immediately just turns into a fascist, which is funny. But also, like, even before Sprout is there, like, ostensibly the real powerhouse of this community is a corporation that is selling people defense weaponry that doesn't work and is garbage,
yes,
built on hate, right? Like it's very anti-capitalism, which is kind of fun. And then they go to the fucking Pegasus place, and the monarchy is lying to everybody.
Yeah.
And so you can't trust the fucking monarchy. And then you go to the unicorn place, and then there is no, like, ruling class relations. This dude owns, like, a tea shop, and that doesn't make any sense. Why does he have that fucking gem?
I don't know. You know why? It's because they didn't plan on the existence of the crystals and had to figure out a way to write this into everything.
Yeah. I did like that Sprout built himself a mech.
I love the mech at the end. I was like, I cannot believe that this is how this ends. And that's how I'm going to convince our friend Alice to talk about this movie on her mecha robot podcast, is because there is a mecha at the end of this movie.
That is called a loophole.
I know I already mentioned it, but I really love the pony D&D, or D&D. I really love the pony DDR and, like, this weird analog DDR machine. It just felt like there was a lot of creativity put into figuring out how something like that would work, even if it is still, like, a little ridiculous.
Yeah, like, the concept is kind of fun. It doesn't really make any sense when the Pegasus world literally has smartphones and the internet.
Yeah, I mean, I literally, like, there is no consistency with the technology in this universe by any stretch.
I'm curious if they'll try to explain it, like the idea that something happened and they basically, like, the tech was built a long time ago, the world regressed, and they just happened to keep it and be able to maintain it versus they built it. I know Cameron pointed out that, like, a metropolis like that, you can't be insular and have, like, that level of wealth in tech. Like, you have to have open borders and trade because that's how things just work. And so the fact that they have all this really advanced shit, but then, like, and wealth and whatnot, and then, like, hate everybody around them, it's kind of weird. Like, it's not, there's not a lot of real world examples of that. Like, isolationism, yeah, is bad for the economy.
The only thing that I can think of is a fictional example of, like, Wakanda.
Yeah. And I said that sentence, and, like, the four listeners just groaned because I'm 30 and this is a movie for, like, 12-year-olds. And I get that. But it's wrong. And someone has to be brave enough to say that, goddammit.
I don't understand how all of these, like, civilizations became so isolated. Like, the movie is very unclear as to when this separation happened. Like the Earth ponies have, like, this, like, ingrained propaganda about how dangerous unicorns and Pegasi are, but then, like, unicorns just seem to think that, like, Earth ponies are a little bit dumb. Like, I mean, but I guess they do think that Pegasi will steal your aura or whatever the fuck is he.
That was another thing that was dumb. Not because the whole aura thing is dumb in its own right, but, like, because it doesn't do anything. It's just something Izzy says. And it's, like, a character trait that goes nowhere. Like, it's just,
I feel,
it's
like,
thrown into the void.
It kind of fits into when you meet the unicorn civilization and see how, like, weird and superstitious they are. The idea that, like, unicorns might also believe in auras or whatever kind of makes sense. Or I think she calls it luminescence, I think is the word that
she used.
Yeah,
she used a $4 word.
But, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, this movie has a lot of weird aspects to it, but overall is very cute and fun, and I'm looking forward to the inevitable TV show. I don't know how that animation is going to be.
Yeah, I'm hoping the things they set up in this movie that they don't really deliver on, obviously, like, if it's a TV show, they have room for it.
Mm-hmm.
I know the thing I said to Cameron is that I think this movie would be a lot stronger if it was 20 minutes longer.
Or at least, like, cut out some of the scenes that didn't really do anything and replace them with scenes that do.
Yeah. I wanted to see the characters interact more and, like, really see that friendship of theirs, like, organically grow.
Mm-hmm.
We get some of it, but I think a lot of it happens off screen because they're traveling pretty far across the country, right, to get to new places. And so it's frustrating that so much of that we don't get to see. And I actually had the same complaint about Rey and the Last Dragon, where there's really good parts of that movie. My favorite parts of it are the characters just hanging out, and there's so little of that. And the movie is so quickly paced and so kind of rushed. And it's like another 20 minutes of them just like playing fucking chess on the boat would be great. Like, I want that. And I want that with this movie too. But obviously you get a TV show, that's going to be most of the TV show.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I wonder, one of my other lingering questions is that they've got like celebrity voice talent in this movie. Are they just going to recast people for the TV show? Like, how is that going to work? Because
I don't know.
Don't know that they're going to have the budget to have some of these actors for, like, you know, however many episodes of a season they want to put out.
I think some of them aren't going to show up again. Like, I really don't see the guy that owned the tea shop coming back.
Really?
Oh, no, I don't think he was important enough.
No, but, like, I kind of liked him, so that's why I wanted him to come back.
I think they'll have to recast the Pegasus's mother.
Well, I mean, like, there are a lot of, like, name voice actors for the TV show, like, or, for this movie. Like, I could see them bringing Kimiko Glynn back because she does a lot of TV work, but, like, I'm not so sure about Vanessa. Well, I guess Vanessa Hudgens mostly makes her work from, like, the Hallmark Channel Christmas movies now, so, like, maybe she could do a TV show, but, like,
which one's she?
She plays Sunny.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want them to recast her. She's fucking great in this, and her singing voice is really good.
And James Marsden, I think is the name of the guy that plays Hitch. And he's probably busy doing the Sonic movie sequel right now, so I don't know if he's available for a TV show, because he was the policeman in Sonic the Hedgehog. And Ken Jeong playing Sprout, you know, like, Ken Jeong does a lot of movies, so I don't know if he would be available to do a TV show. Some of the other actors, you know, like, are lesser known, but it was just, I always thought it was a weird decision to not cast, like, voice actors necessarily, as opposed to, like, some of the quote-unquote stunt casting of this movie, even though everybody ended up doing a really good job. Like, I didn't have any complaints about any of the voice work in this movie, which is not usually the case when a bunch of the voice cast is also just, like, acting celebrities.
Well, that's the thing, is I guess they're not, like, A-list celebrities. I didn't recognize, like, any of them other than Ken Jeong and maybe, like, one other. And so I was like, oh, they got, like, small enough people, they can keep the show going. And they're like, oh, so-and-so's in movies. And I was like, oh.
Well, just because you didn't recognize people doesn't mean they're not notable.
Yeah, it turns out that's true. On the topic of me being wrong, we got 20 minutes left. Do we want to talk about some comic books? I think we covered the Pony movie pretty well.
Yeah. We can do some comics. I will quickly say that I'm still enjoying Crush and Lobo. I know that nobody else is reading that, so there's not really much else to say about it, but I continue to enjoy it.
That's good. I'm glad you're enjoying it.
And I really like Crush as a character, and I mean, like, I could take or leave Lobo, but he makes for a good foil for his delinquent daughter in being an even worse asshole.
Does she have green hair?
No, she has black hair.
Oh.
But she is gay.
That was a 50-50 there.
She is gay, so, I mean...
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, there we go. Speaking of things that maybe you don't like, Dirtbag Rapture, how did you feel about this number one from Oni Press, I think?
There's, like, really interesting ideas in this comic book. Mm-hmm. I like the main character in concept and what she does, and that she doesn't like it and has to put up with it. I don't entirely like how she's written. I think she's kind of annoying, and that's probably kind of the point, but I guess you succeeded. I'm not sure I'll read the second issue.
I kind of liked it.
That being said, there's enough, like, really cool hooks in here narratively and world-building-wise that I kind of want to know how they play out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I enjoyed this. I think it's an interesting premise of, like, this girl who, like, died for, like, a minute and now is sort of inadvertently responsible for helping ghosts fulfill their, like, I don't know, thing they need to do before they can pass on or whatever. And then it's got kind of a fun twist at the end where, like, the ghost that she's trying to help is actually working for, like, a demon, and she just inadvertently killed an angel who was after this ghost that's working for a demon. So I'm kind of interested to see where all of that goes, because it feels like we just packed a lot really into that last second plot twist.
Yeah, the last two pages do a lot of lifting in this, but, like, in kind of a good way, like, in very comic book way, we're like, say what now? I guess I need to figure out what happens next, because I am now invested just because those are really good plot turns.
I will read issue two and let you know if I think it's worth you reading, or if I think that you'll like it.
Okay.
Because I enjoyed it, although I agree with you that it was a little exposition heavy. I think that was just because it has, like, you know, it has a lot to set up, so it's trying to get through all that, but...
Yeah, there's a lot of first issue blues in this, where it's
just,
we really have to introduce all these concepts for the story to work, and there's not always an elegant way to do that.
Mm-mm. Yeah. What about the Me You Love in the Dark? How'd you feel about
this? I love this comic so far. This is such a fun slice of life, like, weird romance thing.
I did not think she was gonna fuck the ghost, and I was so excited that that happened in this issue.
I know, she fucked the ghost.
It was so good! Oh, yeah, I really like this comic. I guess I shouldn't have doubted Scotty Young, but I was thinking that they weren't gonna actually go there. But it was really good.
It feels like really out of Scotty Young's wheelhouse for me, based on the stuff I've read. Like, to me, he's most known for I Hate Fairyland, which is not this. And then, like, I've read some of his Deadpool stuff, which was not this.
This is a lot more Middle tender West, than things that he is normally known for.
Yeah. And, like I said, Middle West has some of this kind of stuff in here where it's a lot more serious. Like, well, way more serious. Way more thematic stuff going on, but there's still, like, a lot of action, a lot of movement, whereas this is, like, really slow paced and really just, like, it's an atmosphere.
Oh yeah, it is a delectable slow burn,
and I'm really enjoying it. And I know, like, the teaser for the next issue is like, oh no, there's blood and broken glass, and it's like, no, I like this, like, cozy relationship. She's just painting and having sex with a ghost, and they're having date night and watching movies, and, like,
to watch the same movie over and over.
What a fucking weirdo.
It's just such a weird little detail.
And she's into it, though, and it's fun, and she's got, like, Santa hat on at one bit because it's, like, Christmas time.
So cute.
It is, I don't know, it's such a strong, strange comic, but I'm really, really captivated. I'm hoping this does whatever it wants to. I know Middle West had a couple arcs that I did not really care for. It ultimately ended strong. And it started strong. And I feel like I Hate Fairyland, it was kind of the same way, where it started really strong and then started going downhill a bit. Mm-hmm. It was never, like, terrible, but I don't know. I like Scotty Young in concept. He does good stuff, but long-running things, I have some ifs.
Yeah. Well, this is, this only got a couple more issues left, huh?
I don't, and that's the thing, is this an ongoing, or is this going to be...
I thought it was a limited. I don't remember...
Because if it's a limited, like, I firmly trust him to do that. Like, he can definitely do six really good issues. He's done that before. What did you think of Righteous Thirst, which is the other image, or the image number one?
Yeah, A Righteous Thirst for Vengeance. Not a lot happened in this issue, because it's just sort of the beginning. It's a new number one. I'm interested to see where this goes. It's kind of a thought-provoking setup about this guy walking in on something awful and then trying to get away, but then, oh no, he leaves a bloody footprint because he did a mercy killing on a bird.
That blood would have absolutely dried by that point.
Yeah.
Like, there had been so much time. And then it's raining. Like, come on, that'd get washed away.
Just for the record, The Me You Love in the Dark is set to only have 5 issues, so...
Really?
That is what I am seeing on the internet, so... We will be approaching the end soon.
Fantastic.
Which, honestly, I feel like this, the premise of it is suited to a short series, so.
Yeah, that doesn't always stop comic books, though.
I'm sure. But yeah, Righteous Thirst for Vengeance. What did you think, Chad?
I liked it. It's interesting. It's kind of subtle. It's
very subtle.
Sort of like day in the life of a guy, and then a bad thing happens.
Mm-hmm.
And
wrong place,
he's kind of stuck with it. Yeah. It's written by Rick Remender.
Yeah.
Who does Deadly Class. And it's like, oh, Deadly Class is really good until it wasn't. And mm-hmm. then he did, I want to say, that like Dirtbag comic, which
that we
sucked.
That we did not like.
So I'm like, well, this guy's really capable of doing fantastic stories, and he's really capable of doing not fantastic stories. So I'm kind of wondering where this is going to go. But I think as a first issue, this is really strong, despite like
not
a lot happening.
Yeah, like by the time it was over, I was a little bit like, oh, like not much happened. But at the same time, I'm like, I want to know what happens next.
Yeah, it's not much happens in a good way. Like, it shows a lot of restraint.
Yes.
And just a lot of, like, hey, we're going to set up, once again, like, a mood.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate that, because I think it does a good job.
Yeah. Did you read Soul Plumber, number one?
I did.
What did you think?
You don't have to read Soul Plumber.
I read it. I did not anticipate that you would like this one. I was actually kind of surprised that you read it at all.
I didn't know what it was about, and so I'm like, well, no new number one, I guess we'll go, and I wasn't enthused after the first, like, two or three pages, but I was kind of curious where it was going to go, and eventually I just read the whole thing.
Yeah.
There's some, like, probably good ideas here. I think the characters are all just so stupid, and it's sort of like, hey, we can say the F word, let's just do that a bunch. And it's weird how sometimes that can really tickle my fancy, but most of the time it honestly doesn't. It's like, no, I want some thought put into how your characters are swearing.
Unfortunately, I think the biggest problem with this book is that it is not being written by comics writers. Do you know anything about this book, Chad?
No, but it's like exposition heavy as fuck.
The writers for this book are the hosts of the podcast, The Last Podcast on the Left. So they're
I've never heard of that podcast.
It's very popular.
Oh.
Yeah. It is it's like a horror podcast. I've never listened to it. I know people who do. They talk about, like, serial killers, conspiracy theories, UFO sightings, ghosts, creepypastas, and they've now started writing this comic book, I guess. And I actually, you know, I thought it was all right. I'm mildly interested in the premise. I like a good religious horror, although I don't know if I would say this is a good religious horror. I thought it was very funny the way that the main character, who is a, like, priest who flunked out of seminary, still wears a collar with his, like, uniform for the gas station he works at.
Yeah, like, there's interesting ideas here. I kind of, my issue is almost how it's handling religion, like...
Yeah.
It's there's a frustrating element to it where I feel like it's not smart enough to do what it's doing. It's not smartly written enough. And so it's like, I get like you're making fun
disagree.
Of this stuff. And it's so inelegant. And
yeah.
It's frustrating and it's kind of ugly.
Yeah, the art is like a little bit ugly.
The fact that the thing works at all at the end doesn't make any sense like in any shape or form.
Yeah, I don't.
Like, the whole point is the thing that, it's like, the whole thing's a grift. And so he's like, I'll build the grift, and it works mm-hmm. for me. Like, that's stupid, unless he's crazy, which is possible. But, like, I don't know if that's an interesting twist. Like, we've seen that before.
Yeah. I would not be interested in that being the twist.
No.
Yeah, I don't know. I may stick around for issue two, but I almost didn't read this one. But it was the last thing that I had to read, and I had enough time, so... I decided to do it.
Did you read Arkham City, The Order of the World?
No, because I didn't think you were going to.
So I ended up doing that because that's the Coffinbound creative
team. Yeah.
And I really like them as writers and artists, and I do like this comic.
Okay, interesting. Tell me about it.
So it's bad shit happens. Everybody in Arkham basically dies except for a handful of people, and the main character is a psychologist there who she wasn't working that day. It was like her first day off in like a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And a bunch of her patients, they manage to survive and escape, and she's trying to work with the police to basically like find them and then get them back into a mental hospital instead of a prison.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously the people that are in Arkham are Batman villains, so they're kind of dangerous. But ostensibly, like, it is kind of an interesting look on how the criminal justice system treats, you know, the mentally ill.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's sort of the thesis of this, and I think that's really, using Batman as like a vessel to do work with that is pretty cool. The twist, though, is that she actually found one of her patients, and that criminal that's, you know, Batman villain is like living with her and sneaking out of the house and still committing crimes. Also, there's maybe a ghost of like the guy who founded Arkham wandering
around.
Yeah, it's got a lot of weird stuff.
A lot of ghosts in this episode.
Yeah, there's a lot of coffin-bound stuff in here, though, in terms of like design work and coloring. Mm-hmm. So it's gritty and it looks weird, and it's kind of nice to read like a DC comic that looks nothing like a DC comic.
Yeah, I get that.
I would recommend it. I really did enjoy it.
Okay. Well, I'll check this out when, because I assume there's going to be, is this like a limited series or do you know?
I would imagine, but I'm not sure.
Just based on the name, it just seemed like something that was probably not going to be a huge ongoing, but I'll probably check this out when issue 2 rolls around.
Nice.
I won't really go into it very much, but the Animorphs graphic novel number 2 came out. I haven't read it yet, but I have it downloaded, and I mean I've read the book for number 2, so but I felt like it was worth mentioning that came out also earlier this week.
Yeah, I keep forgetting this is a thing.
I liked the first one, so I'm looking forward to the second one.
They are on the Curse site, looks like.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious how this works. I also should probably start reading those again, because you've continued on, and
I have.
They're the good books. Like, I remember having a lot of fun. I reread the first 10 last year, and it's like, yeah, I should resume.
The last scene in book 13, I know I post about this on Twitter, but actually, like, genuinely, like, was emotionally affecting for reasons that I don't want to, like, spoil. But
sure.
But you should get back on the books, and maybe we can talk about those. This would have been a good week to talk about them, but we did end up having a lot to say about the horse movie.
Yeah, good old horses.
So, but we can resume Animorphs talk soon if you decide to catch up, because they're not very long books.
Right. I'm reading like other books right now, and I don't typically like to juggle like multiple fiction books at the same time, but Animorphs books take like literally 2 days to read. They're like 70 pages.
Yeah, I mean the audiobooks are like 4 hours long, so I can only imagine it doesn't even take you like all of that to sit and read them, because I imagine read faster than the speed of the audiobook narration.
I think it probably takes me like maybe 2 hours to read an Animorphs book now, like maybe 2.5 on the longer ones, but yeah, they're pretty quick.
Pretty short. Yeah, you should pick them back up, and then we can talk more Animorphs.
We're at 57 minutes. I don't know if... I don't have any big things to say about Nice House on the Lake or Swamp Thing, other than I'm continuing to enjoy these comics.
Yeah, you know, that was what I was also thinking about both of these books, is, you know, they've introduced a new wrinkle to the whole setup mystery in Nice House on the Lake, with, like, a new character showing up at the very end and introducing the idea that they could actually save the world, maybe. And then Swamp Thing, like, it's another good issue of Swamp Thing. Like, what can I really say?
Yeah. I almost don't like the idea of them being able to save the world in Nice House, just because I kind of like the bleakness of it. That being said, if there's going to be more than, like, 5 issues, I don't think you can... I think you need to have a goal. Right, so...
Well, I mean, we also don't know any of the details about what quote unquote saving the world might mean. We don't even know if that, if the person that just showed up is A, telling the truth, or B, knows what he's talking about. So like this
or
whole,
even real,
this is just like introduced a new wrinkle to things that like we don't even know what all of this means yet. So
yeah, very true.
Is this also a limited I don't remember how many issues this is supposed to be.
Apparently it's taking a 5-month hiatus at some point.
Oh. Well,
oh, it looks like a 12-issue run.
Okay. Yeah, it makes sense.
That's a good amount of issues for this story, I think. I respect that.
Yeah, so we're almost halfway. And this feels like sort of a halfway point for the story, so that makes sense. I take it you didn't read Last Flight Out number 2.
No.
It was fine. Like, I thought it was all right. We meet the guy, the main character in issue 1 had, it showed him being like a negligent dad to his daughter, and then at the end of issue 2 we meet the daughter and sort of start to find out why she was not trying to join the spaceship to leave the dying Earth. So also the daughter is drawn, she looks almost exactly like the actress Zendaya, which I thought was weird, but
oh really,
whatever. But this comic is fine. Like, I don't know if I think it's good necessarily, but like, after a sort of lukewarm first issue, this didn't like deter me, so shrug. And it's gonna be, I think it's like a 5-issue or something anyway, so like, I might as well like at least see if any of the next issues are boring enough to like make me put it down.
Sure.
Yeah. I thought it was all right. I continue to think that it seems like a setup for some sort of eventual TV adaptation or something. It seems like one of those.
It sucks that we hit a point where like there's a cynicalness to reading new comics now where like, is this just going to be try to be like a Netflix show?
Yeah.
Fuck you, Mark Millar.
Yeah, fuck you, Mark Millar. That's what the name of this episode should be. It's about fuck you, Mark Millar.
You know, we had to go on a journey to get there, but we went on that journey, and I think we're done.
Yeah, I think so, too.
But I had a good time.
Yeah! Do you want to... Should we do plugs?
Yeah, we can do some plugs. You can find us on The Comics Podcast on Twitter, The Comics Podcast on Facebook, and apparently we're on Instagram on The Comics Podcast.
I don't know if John has updated that in a long time, but technically
I don't think
we
we've updated the Twitter in ages either.
Yeah.
You can find Jean-Luc on Twitter at Mount Dew Liker, where he is drinking a lot and shitposting, and that's kind of entertaining.
Yeah.
Find him on Letterboxd at JLBotBill. You can find me on Twitter at AnonymBand, where I also drink and shitpost, just not as much now. You can find my short stories on anonym.wordpress.com. I got one coming up pretty soon. You can find my music on anonym.bandcamp.com. And then I got books on Amazon, The Ninth Life, Dreamscape, and Toyland.
I know, I need to add Toyland to the template for the episode outlines, but I keep forgetting.
I'm using the fuck out of this template. This is making my life so easy. you can find Alex at Alex Hanziuk on Twitter, HANDZIUK, because his name is hard to spell.
I don't know what the name of his podcast is. I don't remember.
I don't either. I'm also not going to like explain what he does, because I don't want to like dox his job.
Okay.
Because when he accidentally did that to me, the last episode, which it doesn't look like is going up. I don't think that ever got through post. I wasn't super happy about that.
Well, when Jean-Luc finishes the episode, I'm sure he will either like censor that or cut it out in some way.
I just assume not post it because it'll be out of order and that's weird.
Well, I mean, yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Like, I won't bitch about that. You can find Emily on Twitter at mpandanada, and she does a bunch of podcasts. Imagine Me and Utna, which is actually, that's Imagine Me and Yuri Kumina, right?
Well, technically, it's always Imagine Me and Utna, but it is temporarily Imagine Me and Yuri Kuma while we are still, we finished Yuri Kuma the anime, and now we're doing Yuri Kuma the manga, and That's a whole other beast.
So I got like 4 episodes left.
I'm excited to have you on Imagine Me and Yuri Kuma to talk about your bear lesbian thoughts.
I'm very disappointed I haven't took any notes. And I feel like now that I'm this far in, I just shouldn't, because like, why would I start over halfway through being responsible? So that's going to be a rambly mess. I hope you don't mind if I drink on that one, because I probably will.
Oh, that'll be fun.
You also do the Fresh Podcast Market.
Yeah.
And you produce a bunch of other podcasts.
There's 4 of
Big
them.
Big Stebby, Backseat Drawing, Loser Like Me, and another one that has so many dumb words in it, I'm not even going to try
Puella,
to pronounce that.
Magi, Modica, Magicast.
Good God.
Yep. Also just known as Magicast.
You ever think about how much Japan has affected us?
Every day of my life, yeah.
Oh, this has been fun.
I guess it's the end of the episode, so.
It's the end of the episode. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
I might end with a song. I've been working on music. I might throw one out of here.
You haven't done that in a while.
I haven't had new music. I'm actually proud of this stuff now, too.
Ooh.
Yeah.